Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of In Her Corner. This podcast is dedicated to empowering and educating women through sharing the inspiring stories of the few but incredibly impactful women making waves in the sports industry. I'm really pleased to say that our first ever episode is with a woman who I have got to know during this period of lockdown, who has inspired me in so many ways through her amazing warm attitude, but also her absolute excellent pedigree and her professional career and her absolute love for sport and how she's used that to galvanize her. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce to you the absolutely impressive and inspirational Rowena Samarasinghe.
Hi, Lizelle.
Hi, how are you doing, Ro?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. I feel very honored to be part of this amazing team of women in our industry.
Yeah. Thank you. No, the honor is all mine. It's great to have some time with you. I know you're normally incredibly busy traveling all over the world. So I guess the one good silver lining of this whole situation we find ourselves in is that we get some time with you.
Exactly.
So Ro, obviously, you know, to me, you're one of these people that I've been lucky enough to meet through a good mutual friend of ours. You know, but I'm incredibly, you know, in awe of all the great work you've done and things. But I think for the benefit of our listeners who maybe didn't get a glimpse to see sort of match your great accomplishments to a face and a name, would you care to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and probably also correcting the pronunciation of your surname, because I don't think I nailed that.
No, you did pretty well, Lizelle. But it's Rowena Samarasinghe. I'm a commercial lawyer, and I've been working for the last 15 years in the commercialization of sports. That's negotiating the sale of sponsorship and broadcasting rights for international sporting events, but also for a number of high-profile athletes as well. I've been in-house in a general counsel role, but last year I moved back into private practice, and I joined niche sports media and entertainment law firm Level as a partner, while also setting up my own commercial consultancy, which is called Gen Sport.
That's amazing. Do you get a chance to sleep? I think that's going to be my first, given all the things there that you do. When do you sleep?
Well, with all the travel that I did, I actually became a little bit insomniac. So maybe that's helped.
Okay. So I think, you know, for me, one of the things that I always love about meeting people like you and talking to them is just to try and understand, you know, your love for sport and how that came about. And for me in this podcast, I've been really trying to get an understanding of, you know, what is that most memorable sporting moment for you that made you truly realize that I love this, or I've got to pursue a career in this? And could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my most memorable moment, I mean, there have been so many, but I used to be a 100 meters runner. And I think the moment that stands out for me was the moment that Usain Bolt broke his own world record and ran 9.58 seconds at the World Championships in Berlin in 2009. That record still stands today and will continue, I think, to stand for some time. But it was a really special moment for me personally as well, because it was the first of six IAAF World Championships that I was involved in the organisation of. It was also a real pinch me moment, because I'd achieved my professional dreams to be working at the World Championships. Yeah, I was a runner for so long and dreamed of competing in it, but finally I was working on putting the event on, as well as witnessing such a momentous sporting occasion.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing. And I remember watching that race. And as I say, I had goosebumps at home, but obviously just as a fan. But I couldn't imagine how much extra the elation of feeling would have been having been a part of that. So just to pick up there, you said you were a runner. Is that how you came into working in sport? Is it from the fact that you actually used to, you know, compete? Is that been a part of your routine, or have they been any other influences?
Yeah, so I think as an ex-athlete, I did have a passion for sport from a very young age. And this was so much so that I went to a sports school from the age of 12. So I really had that background. My father was a fairly famous sportsman in Sri Lanka. So sport had been a major role, had played a major role in our family. I still remember at about the age of 7 when my father took me to my first rugby game. And that was a real regular occurrence for both myself and my brother. So we were really integrated into sport really, really early on. Learning from my father's experience, however, both my brother and myself were also encouraged to focus on our studies as well as participating in sport. So it was always more the thought that I would pursue a career in sport rather than necessarily follow the route of professional sport, even though that was all I wanted to do at the time.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think we all have sort of that moment where, you know, we say like, we realize we're not going to make it to be the professional athlete, but what more can we do? And I'd like to touch a little bit more on your dad there. You said, obviously, he was quite a famous sports personality in Sri Lanka. Do you care to tell us? Because we actually had a little bit of a laugh about this the other day. He wasn't a cricketer, which would be the... So could you tell us a little bit about your dad and background?
Yeah, so everyone thinks when you say Sri Lanka that everyone plays cricket. But actually, dad was mainly a rugby player, but he also played hockey. He ran the 400 metres. He was an amazing swimmer and he played water polo. So he had quite an all-rounded sporting background. But that was also most of his brothers and sisters as well were like that as well. So, yeah, no cricket in our family, bizarrely.
I was going to say, is anyone a great cricketer? Well, I think, you know, the point you make there is so important about how, you know, how you grow up, but it shapes, you know, your relationship with sport and your way in. And I guess for me, you know, that has always been natural myself, having come from a very sort of a family who embraced and played sport at a really good and different level. I think that definitely, you know, works. And is it running? Is running your passion? Is that the thing that you love? Or are there other sports that you look to for inspiration in the work you do? Because obviously you work in such a varied scale of different events.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously my main sport was athletics, but I played netball, I played a lot of squash. The real appeal for sports for me growing up was the team mentality, the feeling that you were part of a family or of a community. And even though I participated in an individual sport, I still really had that sense of belonging, and I'm still really close to a lot of the people I trained with growing up. Now I mainly do mountain sports, but I still, again, feel very much part of community, and I think that's what really spurs me on in terms of the sports element.
Yeah, I think that point you make about community is a really important one to touch on, because I primarily, you know, wanted to do this podcast to bring together yourself and other women to create that sense of community that I feel we've all in different ways benefited from as a result of taking a part in sport. And I think at this moment in time when there's so much, you know, anger and disappointment and a lack of feeling of togetherness through the different suffering, I think having that community can really help shape how you deal with challenges that you meet in life, and also help, you know, be that sort of backup, you know, when you need it, as well as be an opportunity for you to develop leadership skills. So, you know, I think it's really, really great to hear how much that played a role for you, because I think for young girls who are listening now and maybe can't imagine, you know, getting to your great impressive level, but just knowing that having those fundamental building blocks from a young age and getting that grasping of belonging that gives you, you know, the confidence to do things because you have support is important to also to reiterate.
Absolutely. And just to touch on that point, I mean, a lot of the work I do around female empowerment is really using sport as a way to address gender balance. Because I do believe that the skills we learn playing sport, and those are the things you talked about, teamwork, leadership skills, confidence, they translate directly into the business world. So I think that it's a really interesting trait. I think a lot of girls particularly drop out of sport at a young age. And I'm interested to know whether this is a reason that we have such inequality in the higher echelons of business, because more men have played sport at a younger age. And actually, if there was a way in which we could keep young girls in sport, maybe this would inspire the future leaders, the female leaders in business.
Yeah, definitely. And a project that I was involved in that really looked at this in a really big way was the This Girl Can campaign, which ran here in the UK. So the This Girl Can campaign, for those who are listening and unfamiliar, was a campaign that was really driven around getting women of all different ages to start to create more positive and regular associations with fitness and physical activity through playing sport or going to gym and gym classes, and doing it in a way that was authentic and really bring around teaching those skills you've talked about. So I think, you know, at this particular moment in time, more than ever, what is it that you think the biggest opportunity is, or who do you think has the biggest opportunity to really capitalize and help girls and women be more active and participant in sport?
Well, as a young girl who played sport, I saw firsthand the challenges of keeping young people in sport. And like I said, I witnessed so much amazing talent leave sport, which for me was crazy at the time. But especially with girls, we have a lot of social issues, body image, confidence, and that can impact you. It's tough enough being a teenager, let alone running around in tight clothing and worrying about what people are saying about you. And I think this has a huge impact on sport. But I also think it's about creating really interesting role models for girls in sport. You know, we have so many unbelievable women in sport, and a few of them do get centre stage, but actually the big point, I think, is the visibility aspect and enabling girls to see their role models and then also to feel part of that community, being able to follow and learn about how these great women were able to progress their careers in sport, to give them hope and to inspire them, hopefully, to do the same.
That's great. Yeah. And I think the point you touch on there is a really good one about the role model aspects of different women in sport, because that's another thing. You know, often we see the same great examples like Serena Williams, you know, in this country, Jessica Ennis, Katherine Johnson Thompson, and, you know, but the point is that they are more women and they are more stories and they're more roots in. And I think there's a really great, exciting opportunity for media, you know, in particular, not just broadcasters, but also general lifestyle content media to tell those women's stories in a really authentic and relatable way so that it can become not just an inspirational, but tangible aspiration to follow in.
Absolutely. And I think, like you mentioned it, the point about stories is so important, because actually what it is telling every little girl out there, you can make your dream come true. You know, all these women come from such different walks of life. It's not just the privileged ones or the ones who've had the best opportunities. You know, some sports people, full stop, only came into sport later on in life. So, and I think that was actually the beauty of the This Girl Can campaign, because it was actually saying, you know, just because you haven't done sport most of your life, it doesn't mean you can't start now. And I think that's a really important part of it.
Yeah, no, definitely agreed with that. And just whilst we're on that subject of, you know, encouraging women to be in sport, I think, you know, another element of this podcast, which you and I talked about, that I really wanted this project to help galvanize, was the idea that even if you aren't so interested in the pursuing of playing, you can still have a meaningful career in working in sport. So women in sport as opposed to just women's sport together, because I think the two go hand in hand. And do you care to share a little bit about your thinking about how we can help redress that balance if we had more women working in sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with diversity, you know, and it's the same story, that when you have diversity and decision-making capability, then that churns out, it creates innovation. You know, you can't have new ideas if you have the same people making the same decisions over and over again. And certainly sport is still guilty of that. It's still very much... a lot of councils, a lot of boards are reflective of the people who've traditionally played those sports, of the people who've been doing it all the time. They hire the same people who they know, they look like. And it definitely is something that we need to work on collectively as an industry. And yeah, definitely to encourage more women to step up. I think a lot of women often lack confidence to go for roles. I think I saw Ernst & Young did a really great report on women in leadership roles. And actually they said something like, men will apply for a job if they believe they can do 30% of it, whereas women will only apply for a job if they can do 80% of it. Yeah. And you know, that's a huge stat. You know, it just shows how actually we need to encourage these women to believe in themselves and say, actually, do you know what, you can go for something. And if you're capable of doing it, then you'll get it, you know. And it's about creating those opportunities around sport, which I think will happen more and more as we see the next generation coming through.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a very pertinent point. And I think, you know, just one thing that I find incredibly impressive is very much a point you touched on there about how the fact that there aren't enough women on enough board positions, but you have actually a lot of great key positions on boards, hence why, you know, for me, you're that boardroom powerhouse. So how did you get those seats at that table? Because I think one of the things I also want here is for people who are, you know, at the stage that you were at before, where you got to understand what are the useful learnings you gained from that they can then draw on to try and get more into these positions.
I mean, I think, you know, I moved into sports 15 years ago when, and especially in the sports legal world, and I don't think anyone would dispute that it was a very close-knit, very small community of a lot of white men. And I still remember running around applying for pretty much every job out there and facing the same stumbling blocks at the time. But really, I didn't give up. You know, I was so passionate about this. And that's one of the things I've always thought. If you're planning your career, you need to make sure you're doing something that you love and you feel really strongly about, because then you can't fail. You know, you won't let hurdles or obstacles get in your way. You'll find a way around it. And honestly, when I was trying to move into sport, I think I must have applied for about 50 jobs, and you know, obviously had a lot of rejections, but I knew it would happen eventually, and it absolutely did. And, you know, my first sports-focused role was working on the Euro 2008, which was an amazing, amazing event and opportunity. And it was patience. But what I would say is I always had that self-belief that I would be able to do it. I never doubted, no matter what the industry looked like at the time. I thought it was just waiting for the right time and the right opportunity to come along. And so that's the one thing, persistence, I guess. But I think the really important part of that is that story is saying, you know, make sure you pick something that you love and you feel strongly about, because then I think nothing can stop you.
Yeah, no, I think that's very important, having a real purpose, you know, that drives your passion, that if you feel like it's not just a job, you know, it's something more to you, then yeah, I definitely identify with what you're saying there. Just also whilst, you know, now that you're in these board positions, what sort of work do you do on these? What kind of things do you do to try and get, you know, that, you know, women that are persisting to try and get forward? How do you look to open that up a little bit more?
I mean, it's a really interesting time that we're in at the moment, Lizelle. You know, it's especially right this moment, I think we're seeing a shift that we're all experiencing. And I really hope it's going to be a shift for the better. But certainly a lot of sports organizations over the last 5 to 10 years have gone through a process of reviewing their governance structures and have acknowledged that they've been particularly lacking in gender diversity, but also ethnic diversity as well. And so a lot of organisations perhaps didn't have codes of governance before. You know, the UK put in a code of sport, so it was there's been a change, a marked change in the way that we collectively have approached leadership in sport. I'm not a big fan of quotas, because certainly I don't want to be on a board because I'm a woman and Asian. I understand why they're important and why sometimes you need a helping hand to address balance. But for me, it's more changing attitudes. And actually, that's why I said I think right now we're living a really, what I think might be a seminal moment. Yeah. Where the world is looking at things differently and saying, actually, am I, without even realizing it, am I biased? How do I look at things? You know, do I need to be more diverse in my approach? And I think that's the key point. I think it's about saying, I'm not going to put someone on this board because they're from a minority, but actually I'm going to look at everybody and give that opportunity to those people who perhaps may not have had an opportunity and may not be able to even get to the stage where they could interview for that role. And for me, that's the most important part of it. It's that middle layer and saying, okay, how can we support those people? And it's not just women or ethnic minorities. It's also people who lack confidence. You know, there's a lot of amazing talent that we just need to support to be able to lift them up to that next level. And I think that, for me, is the key in addressing this the diversity question.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very pertinent point that you make about the taboo around talking about this subject, because I have to say myself, you know, when I was, you know, creating this podcast and thinking through the questions and also my own experiences, there is this hesitation I think everybody has about talking about it because of the level of trauma, I think is actually a really good word you use there, that is associated with moments that you remember from your childhood like that, that just, you don't want them to become such a part of your psyche because you feel like they're going to hold you back in themselves, that the discrimination won't be just the only thing. It'll be how you then associate with it. But I think now I feel like there's an opportunity through talking through how difficult that is on both sides of the fence in order to get forward, right? I think recognizing that it's hard and difficult in itself can help us to actually clear a lot of the hurdles that are initially there. So removing the taboo around it in the same way as the taboo has been removed around talking about the gender gap, you know, in our sport, can also help us to move around the issue around racism and how it acts. Because, you know, there's a lot of just, let's say, this kind of reluctance to be uncomfortable. But I think there's actually a real strength in us all being uncomfortable in this moment on this particular subject, because it then will move, in my view, I see this as an opportunity to create a form of goodwill amongst humanity to say, this is an issue we're all really struggling with. Let's band together and sort it out. And that's how I hope people take this moment to reflect and actually act.
Agreed. And I think there is something to be said about growth and change out of uncomfortable situations. You know, if we spend our life carrying on being comfortable, we never develop more. And I think the same is true of here. And I think it's not just, I think everyone's feeling a little bit sensitive about the subject and the approach. You know, I've had a couple of discussions with organizations with whom I've worked who've felt perhaps the need to be a little bit reactive to what's happening and to send something out, to say something. And some people have very openly had that conversation with me about it, and others have perhaps tiptoed around a little bit more. But I think, you know, to go back to your point, it's really important that we use this momentum to actually make real change this time. I mean, the speech that Martin Luther King gave was something like 60 years ago. And it's crazy that in 60 years, we're still living in a time where these things happen. And I think the point now is that let's not just make statements and say we support this and want to make change, but actually let's focus on what we can do to make change and make that the important takeaway. And then be proactive on this point rather than just being reactive and address this, like you said, this unconscious bias that really is so inherent in society that we just absolutely need to change.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think taking a moment to pause and be purposeful is really important for everyone. So yeah, that's really good advice, you know, for everybody on each side. So thank you for, you know, opening up to talk about that, because I can imagine it's a tough one, especially, you know, when you're straddling the roles that you do in different organizations. So it's been really heartening to, you know, have that, yeah, as a chat. You know, one of the things that really excited me about being able to have this conversation with you was to try and have a moment to reflect on those great milestones you've had in your career and to think about what they've taught you. Because I think one of the things I always wonder, certainly being a big sports nut, you know, I revel in those kind of documentary series like the recent one they did, The Last Dance, you know, and Michael Jordan, and looking back at what helped him and that Bulls team be so successful. So this is kind of the segment within the podcast where I hope we get to delve a little bit deeper. So to help us kind of get an idea of your psyche and how you approach things, I'm going to just ask you to talk through three career defining for moments or projects that you've worked on and what you got out of those. So we'd like to understand a little bit about what they taught you. So give us a little background on what they were and what you got out of them. So if there was anything as a result of those projects that, for example, taught you or gave you an accomplishment that you've used to build on to any others, or just maybe even how you approach work and your roles on these pivotal boards that you sit on. And then also looking at how, if maybe something didn't go right, what did you learn from the fact that it didn't go right that has now informed your perspective on how you approach things and think would be useful to share with other people in your position or aspiring to get to your position?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first one that I'd like to talk about is along the lines of what we've been discussing in terms of how I got into the industry. When I was trying to break into the sports legal industry, I actually interviewed for an in-house role, and it was an organization that I really wanted to work for at the time. It came down to two of us, and ultimately the organization chose a less qualified and less experienced white male. And I remember at the time being very disappointed, but not really, I think as I mentioned before, I was getting used to rejection at the time. So I just kind of held my head up and carried on and just looked for other opportunities. But actually later on, the person who was offered the job actually mentioned to me that he'd actually asked the question as to why he'd been picked over me.
What was he told? I'm so curious to know.
So he was told it was because I was a woman, which was amazing. And I don't think it's not one thing that I'd ever publicly talk about in terms of who it was. But The worst part of this experience for me, and the part which made me, which I think is the key takeaway from this, was that I was discriminated against by a woman. So it was a woman who made this decision, and it was someone who I'd looked up to and considered to be a role model, and I felt really disheartened because I just thought, if women weren't supporting each other, you know, what hope did we have? And again, it comes back to why when we first talked about this concept for a podcast, I loved it, because I think there is a change now. I think it isn't just the few women in the industry who are protecting their positions, but actually what we need to be doing is supporting these women and helping to change that balance. But at the time, you know, I could have given up. You know, I really felt so upset about the whole thing. But actually what happened was it motivated me even more, and it really made me adamant that I wanted to make it into the system and affect real change. And I, you know, I sort of made that decision that no other aspiring woman would be held back under my watch. And it was amazing because I didn't feel bitter about it. I actually felt inspired. And I, you know, behaved, I thought it was more, even more important to behave professionally and actually make change in that way. So again, it goes back to why, since that point, I've always made sure that I surround myself with people who are going to support me in my missions and in my goals, and the people who are less supportive of me for whatever reason, then I say bye bye.
Can I just commend you for the amount of grace that you used to overcome that situation, how you took probably all those negative feelings that, sadly, I'm afraid to say, I've experienced myself in that position, and turn it into something really purposeful and positive. And I think that is such an important thing for everybody, not just women, but everybody, to learn from an experience like that, to say, don't let, you know, that person's actions define who you are or put limitations on what you can achieve. Instead, focus on how that experience can drive you on to do something more. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us, because I think a lot of us have had those moments, and it seems much easier to just get bitter and down. But I think turning instead that energy into something really positive is a really, really good lesson.
Agreed. And I actually, you know, maybe that moment defined me and made me the person I am today, and you know, helped me with my motivation. Who knows?
Definitely. And I think that is also a thing, right? And it's also a lesson I learned from my parents very early on as a child, to say, you know, don't just look on the things that, you know, your losses as a complete waste of time. Also try and find out what they do, how they build to make other wins, how they build to make other things possible. And that's certainly something that I think sport also teaches you in a very basic way. You know, you watch and you see people you admire competing and you watch them lose, but then you watch how they use that pain to bounce back. And it's really great to see that you've channeled that same energy into your professional career, but most of all, I think how you've channeled it to make sure that no one else has to go through that same bitter disappointment, you know?
And I think it goes back to what we talked about, you know, playing sport. You know, you learn pretty early on what it feels like to lose, because unfortunately I never won everything, but you know, you have that passion. You so want to win something, but it's not always going to go your way. But it's how you can break as a result of that, or how actually you can say, do you know what, this happened, what have I learned from that, and take that learning and move on. And I think that was, again, I do credit sport with a lot of that.
Well, that's really great to hear. And if we move on to your sort of second, I guess they're not in order, but another career defining moment or experience you've had, and what that taught you and how you've taken that forward.
Yeah, so very early on in my last role, I was general counsel in-house at an agency, and on behalf of my agency, I negotiated World Athletics' then most significant sponsorship agreement with Adidas. And at the time, it was quite a groundbreaking deal, and it sort of set the stage for a new level of partnerships moving forward. And I was very junior at the time. I'd come from a role when I was a senior lawyer in-house, but I had this massive learning curve over about the period of 6 months when I was general counsel. And then suddenly I was running this huge deal and important deal. And I felt a lot of pressure at the time, mainly from myself. my then boss and the entire team around me had complete confidence in me, but it was one of those moments when I knew I was an outstanding lawyer, but I just lacked the confidence at the time. And I think everyone goes through this, and especially when you take that leap to the next level. And I remember I put my head down. I didn't sleep very much during those few days, but you know, I got it done. But it was a hugely impactful deal for me, because it was the first time that I didn't have my hand held by anyone. And like I said, it was such a significant deal, and I had a lot of trust and confidence. Well, people had a lot of trust and confidence in me and to make the right decision. But I think part of the development process that we all go through is doing those things that are outside our comfort zone. And admittedly, I didn't have a choice, but also I loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was such an adrenaline rush to be doing this. But it goes back to the point that I made earlier. You know, it's about having faith in yourself and realizing that you wouldn't be there if you couldn't do this job. You know, if you weren't capable, you would be there. And everybody has wobbles, and we all get nervous. I read a really interesting article recently about Messi, and about how every time he actually goes onto the pitch, he gets really nervous. And you know, it's really normal to feel like that, but it's just going back to that point of self-belief and knowing you can do that. And for me, it just, when I approach opportunities, when I go for roles, when I pitch for business, even if it's something completely new, I always have that self-belief in myself, thinking, well, you know, how hard can it be? I'm sure you can do it. And it is that, I think that was a huge learning that I got from that deal in particular.
Yeah. And if I could just go back to the pressure that you felt during that deal, how did you cope with that? Because we've all had those big deals at work, or big presentations, or moments where we feel almost engulfed a little bit by the moment. What are the things that you do to cope with that?
Well, to be honest, it's probably different now to what I did then. I think I just panicked and ran around with my hair on fire. But you know, I think the whole point is that, you know, you make yourself as prepared as you can be. And it goes back to the point that we said that, you know, no one's flawless, no one's perfect. You probably will make mistakes, and it's about how you manage those mistakes and limit them, I guess, but just understand that you're doing the best you can do. And like I said, if you have that self-belief in yourself, then it doesn't, you know, you as long as you know that you've done the best job that you can, and that's what I strive to do in everything I do. I just do the best that I can do. You know, touch wood, I don't think I've had any major problems since then, but no, it's that self-belief issue and just relaxing into it and understanding that you can do this.
Yeah. And also understanding that even if it doesn't all go well, the fact that you will learn from it and be stronger and better as a result of it is also important, right?
Exactly.
And sort of touching on, you know, that last sort of career defining moment of experience or that you've maybe had or are looking forward to having, and what have you had out of that?
So as I mentioned at the start, last year I took the jump and left my very, very stable job and went out into the wide world of entrepreneurialism. And also alongside doing the legal work, I set up this commercial consultancy. And 7 months in, I negotiated my first commercial deal with a very high profile athlete. And it was such a seminal moment for me because I'd achieved something that I'd never done before. I took the deal from start to finish. But it was also very humbling because I was out on my own doing my own thing. But actually, I realized that I still had a great team of people around me, people who'd helped get the deal, put the deal in place, and people who'd supported me. But also I felt I got a few interesting responses from within the industry because obviously everyone thought of me as a lawyer, and yeah, suddenly I was doing commercial deals. Yeah. And especially, I guess, the legal side, the sales side, again, as I'm sure you're aware, is also still very male. So I had some people
ask you how you were pivoting in the new role. Really changed for you, really?
Well, it was, you know, it was a huge, I mean, I'd been involved in a lot of the sales side of what I did anyway, but to have actually done a deal myself was, you know, it was a great confidence boost for myself. But I did find a real mixed response. Some people were very proud and really positive and hugely supportive, and some people were just a bit like, oh, you're doing commercial sales now. And it was one of those moments when you were just like, well, why not? Actually, you know, I don't consider myself to be a saleswoman, but I do consider myself to have an amazing network.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes things come together and you can do great things, and certainly that's what I strive to do moving forwards, is to use that network to deliver different deals, different structures that perhaps haven't been done in the past. But it really was such a confidence boost for me and my new business. And also it gave me credibility that perhaps I didn't have before. Like I said, everybody knew me as being a lawyer. And suddenly I'd completed this deal, which, you know, again, suddenly made people look at me in a slightly different way. So that was a really great moment.
And it's great to hear that, you know, even at the stage that you're at, you still have those moments where you've got to push through a barrier to something different, and the feeling of great conviction and added confidence it gives you about tackling new things and moving yourself out of a comfort zone, right? So it's really great to hear, and I'm incredibly happy for you, you know, because if there's somebody who is deserving of being successful, to you, because you're so phenomenally single-minded about being persistent and being honestly, it's a really great quality, and it's something I really admire in you. And I think being around you and hearing about what you do itself is really galvanizing. So thank you for having that spirit. Rowena, so just as we're looking to sort of wrap up, and we really thank you for the time you've put in this, I want to sort of touch on two key topics that for me are really important for how collectively as an industry, the sports women working in sport, as well as women playing sport, and also the men working in sport, can help move things forward. So what do you see as being that really great opportunity to driving women's sport forward and changing the current underrepresentation of women, either playing sport or indeed working in it?
So it's going to sound a little bit strange, but I think the best opportunity for women's sport is actually women themselves. You know, as we all know, women are very different to men, and this is also true in the way in which we consume entertainment, including sport. Now, as a woman who played sport, who's spent most of my life trying to get more women involved in sport, trying to get my friends who have children to be more interested in sport because that has a knock-on effect, I've kind of looked at how men watch sports and how I think women do. And I think men are very tribal in the way that they look at sport. You know, they want to belong to a sporting gang, even if that's just a group of guys who go to the pub to watch sport. Whereas women, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but I think that they're a little bit cliquey about it. So they look for groups who are aligned in their interests, and, you know, they have bonds through association. And I think the key for me to women's sport is exploiting this kind of group mentality of women.
Yeah.
And I think rather than selling women's sport to the sort of existing male consumer market, actually we need to focus on bringing women to the discussion. And I've always felt that the appeal of sport to women isn't actually in sport itself, but it's around sport. They don't necessarily watch sport all the time, but engage in it in different ways. And I think that's where it could be interesting to look at opportunities like this, where we talk about sport, where we perhaps show clips and a short form of sport that could start a discussion around sport. And I feel that could be an interesting way of getting more women involved in sports who perhaps had less interest in it previously.
Yeah. So I guess in a sort of tangible example, would you say, for example, original content producers like Netflix and Amazon, as well as existing sports broadcasters, do you think this is where they could play a role in the kind of stories they tell about sports through their mediums and their platforms?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. You know, I think actually post-COVID, I think there's going to be a really interesting opportunity as the world has gone digital and everyone's got used to these online collaborations. I'd be really interested to know how many women watched The Last Dance on Netflix. You know, I think that has been quite a groundbreaking series that has come out at a time when a lot of people are watching OTT and entertainment series, but actually it's a sporting one.
Yeah.
And it'd be really interesting to know if there were a lot more women who perhaps watched it than would normally watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, again, it's creating these stories that aren't focused so much on the sport itself, but around the journey and how people have got there. And it goes back to that point I said about how sport can be really inclusive, and not just in terms of having to excel in it, but actually just the whole picture around it. And I think opportunities like this are the most interesting way, I think, of getting women more interested in sport.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And I want to take this moment to speak about it, an experience I've had myself during this period with a group of my friends who have kind of been my lockdown support committee. I'm always the one in the group who's kind of made fun of for being the sport obsessed junkie, etc. The number of times I've dragged these poor women to events with me, definitely getting dragged. Don't worry. And I know with you, it's not dragging. You will actually enjoy them. So, but what my sort of eureka moment of success, you know, obviously, you know, having the background that I do working for a sports broadcaster, DAZN, has been speaking with my friend Imi, who's one of the girls has been my lockdown support via Zoom. She started to talk about, and she's an asset manager, right? So she started to talk about how she started watching Sunderland Till I Die. So this is prior to Last Dance coming out. And how she said, you know, she'd never realized until she started watching Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix, which follows Sunderland FC, a football club based in England. And she said she'd never realized all the different components of how running a football club from a business side of things actually were really aligned with her job and the things that drove her to work in her career. And I just thought to myself, you know what, there's actually a real role to be more deliberate about making that type of content for that reason, for women audiences. Because had we not, you know, me probably not jabbering in her ear all the years she's had me as a friend, she probably never would have watched Sunderland Till I Die, but she did. And what it did and opened up her perspective on what she wanted to do with that. And I wonder, as you say, it would be great to have a deep dive with Netflix and ESPN to find out how many women watch that and what has it done for their relationship with the sport. Because I think that will inform what kind of content is actually meaningful to make and how we then use that to shape how we actually move women working in sport, but as well as playing and participating in it.
Because I think when we talk about sports, people think, oh, it's agents, it's coaches, it's you know, sort of the key things. But there's so many different aspects of working in sport, and I think that actually it makes it more real for people, because you know there are people out there who are doing normal jobs, but actually those jobs translate into sport as well. And actually, I think it could be really interesting to show that in that light and say, yeah, you know, you could be coaching the next Serena Williams or Roger Federer or whoever, and actually showing a different side to the industry that we work in.
Definitely agreed with that. And so, yeah. And so whilst we're on that side of, you know, looking at these projects and that you want to do, and I think, you know, how does that tie into your legacy of what you want to leave behind, you know, as a result of your career and the path you've taken? What is that sort of one thing you would love people to know and remember you for?
I think the biggest thing for me is that, you know, I'm such a champion of diversity for obvious reasons. You know, I am a woman and I am an ethnic minority and I have struggled to get to where I am. But I'd just love to see change at C-suite, at board levels, and not just change for the sake of change, but real change. You know, we touched on this earlier, and for me, it's diversity is the secret to the future. You know, diversity of opinion is how we will actually start thinking about things differently. There's so many conversations I'm having with people around the next sponsorship model and how, you know, use of boards and traditional assets is so outdated, and what's the future. And actually, in order to experience all these or to explore all these new ideas, you need to have different people at the table, and people who haven't necessarily come from the same pool of people to get there. And I think that would be my real target. And how to do this for me would be to, you know, going back to that point again of encouraging women, encouraging people from minorities, encouraging less confident people, and again, this is men too, to come forward for these roles, and to support them, and again, make it real. Like, you know, we've shown this on this podcast. You know, I had a tough time trying to get in the industry. I had a lot of interviews. I had a lot of rejections. But, you know, it will happen to everyone. You know, if you really want something, then, you know, it's not going to be plain sailing. I didn't just walk into my first job and land on working on the European Football Championships. You know, it was a process to get to that point. But actually you can do it, you know, and it's just, it goes back to that point about really picking something that you're passionate about, that you believe in. And then I think everyone will see that. And, you know, I hope that comes across when I talk about this, because it is something that I'm so, so passionate about. And I really want to help people to achieve their goals and do it in this way. And again, just through that point of self-belief and really understanding that they can do it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that that's a great, powerful message. And I can speak, you know, personally from having benefited from being around you and just showing your lived experience and how you've overcome those obstacles and things is really pertinent. And I think making people aware that it's not plain sailing. And so, you know, for me, when I think about, you know, what I will certainly remember you for and will always thank you for is how real and authentic and how just your sheer drive and passion and persistence have helped you achieve so much. I think it's a thread that's clearly run through from your family. You know, it's almost a definition of how your family have galvanized themselves. But more importantly, I think what I love about it is that despite the fact that you've had all these challenges along the way, you've not let it stop you from being purposeful and positive. And so for me, having a really purposeful and positive impact is your legacy. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for, you know, using everything you've done and now using your current really great influential position on these boards, in these different circles, to make sure that anybody who's willing to put up their hand to have a go and accept that it won't always land and won't always get that first win, but will keep going, has somebody there. That's really inspirational. So thank you, Rowena.
Thank you. It's great to be able to share that experience with people.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for listening to the first episode of In Her Corner. You've been with myself, your host, Lisely Sitali, and the wonderful Rowena Samarasinghe. Thank you.